Hello and welcome to Minor Ricks. I'm Charlie, and today I'm joined by Ariana, Angelo, and Maureen. And today we'll be talking a little bit about the 2023 Oscars. But before we do that, it's been a little while since we've all convened here. Sorry about that. Some of the voices that you've grown accustomed to on this podcast are no longer working at the library, but we wish them all the best. We've got a lot of new faces, new voices, and they've got great perspectives, and I'm sure that everyone who liked this podcast in the past will like it just as much in the future, if not more.
Such praise.
So yeah, the Oscars are coming up, the 95th Academy Awards, and that brings up the question, have we seen any movies? Are they still making movies? I kind of lost track of cinema entirely when all of the theaters closed down a couple years ago. Yeah, do you watch movies? Where do you watch movies?
I haven't gone to theaters to see a movie in a long time, and I'm kind of digging this whole streaming way of watching our Oscar movies, which is nice that we can do it from the comfort of our home right now. Of the Oscar picks for this year that I've seen Banshees of Inisherin, Women Talking, and Everything Everywhere All at Once.
Excellent. I also saw Everything Everywhere All at Once and loved it. I think that one's on Paramount Plus. And I also saw Elvis in the good old-fashioned cinema. But apart from that, I've just been sort of watching television shows and kind of forgetting about movies entirely. Maureen, how about you? What have you seen?
I've also only seen movies via streaming because theaters are not the place to be anymore, I guess. But I did see Glass Onion, and then I saw the documentary Fire of Love, which is on Disney Plus, and it's done by National Geographic.
Okay.
Yeah.
What's that one about?
It's about two volcanologists, and volcanologists are scientists that study volcanoes. But it's about their story of how they met, they married each other, and then they go on all these adventures studying volcanoes around the world. And it's a really interesting look at two people who just like do a very dangerous job.
Interesting.
Do you think it's going to win Best Documentary Feature Film?
I feel like it definitely should. I thought it was really well done. They had lots of really nice animation to like illustrate different volcano things. So hopefully it wins. It was really pretty how they did some of these filming things.
Excellent. And Angela, what have you watched recently?
Well, let's see. Just to quickly comment on the whole theater thing, I do not miss theaters. I like being home and watching them on my TV.
The floor is less sticky.
No one's munching popcorn in my ear. Let's see.
You can get an app for that.
In case you do miss it.
Right, yeah, just the sound of people discussing the plot points behind you.
No.
I think that is interesting, though, because I think my dad's girlfriend's son is like a big movie guy, and he loves going to the theaters. Like during the pandemic, he still worked at the theaters once they were open again and everything like that. And he goes to movies all the time by himself. And so I think a lot of people who are really into movies or some of these Oscar nominees do enjoy the aspect of going there, and that's like part of the whole movie going Oscar experience.
Yeah.
I know this is already off topic, but I did see Nope in theaters.
Okay.
And there's this really good scene early on where you could just like, it's a really tense moment and you could feel the atmosphere of the whole theater. Everyone's like on edge. So there is that. Mm-hmm. But anyway, in terms of Oscar picks that I watched, I watched Banshees of Inisherin and Elvis as well. Everything Everywhere All at Once, Tar, and not a nominee for Best Picture, but I also saw Glass Onion, which is in the running for Best Screenplay.
Great. So yeah, it sounds like we've all seen at least a couple films. What do we fancy for some of these to win? What are some of our favorites?
Well, I really liked the ones that I really liked Banshees of Inisherin. I really liked Everything Everywhere All at Once. And I also really liked Women Talking. But clearly, you were like so looking forward to Elvis that like you actually went to the theater.
I don't know
to
if
see
I
it.
Was looking forward to it. I was. There were a lot of things about the movie that sort of gave me pause. And I just had to see it because I was kind of worried it was going to be terrible. Previously on this podcast, when we talked about the film Bohemian Rhapsody, I registered my displeasure at a lot of musical biopic films, partially because I am a musician. I listen to a lot of music. I read about a lot of musicians. And every time they get something wrong, whether it's taking a couple of different characters and creating a composite character or taking historical events out of their timeline, or just using the wrong guitar, just general anachronisms, like that's not the right drum set, or like that amplifier wasn't made until the late 70s, that sort of thing. I get really techie and nerdy and bitter about music biopics. And this one in particular, I had a little bit of pause when they said Tom Hanks was going to be in it, because anytime an actor I think is too recognizable, you don't lose them in the role. Mm. Like another music biopic that I had high hopes for and was disappointed by was the Brian Wilson biopic Love and Mercy, where for about half of the film, Brian Wilson as an older man was played by John Cusack. And it was just terrible. I never forgot that it was John Cusack for a second. And I was worried that the same thing was going to happen. And then Tom Hanks got COVID while making the movie. Like that was during the first, like the week when everyone realized that it was a big deal. The fact that Tom Hanks got COVID and they had to shut down production seemed like a bad omen. And also the director, Baz Luhrmann, I think I had only seen Moulin Rouge of his, and I did not like it. I know people love this movie. My girlfriend loves this movie and was very offended that I did not like it, but it was just sort of like a sensory overload in a bad way. Maybe I was just watching it on a bad DVD. I should have seen it in a theater, but...
How dare you?
It just gave me a headache. I'm sorry. It was very maximalist.
Yeah, I think that's funny because we are trying to save most of our discussion for this podcast. But Angela and I were actually discussing it the other day because I was saying that I hadn't seen Elvis and he was sharing some of the same opinions that you had about the director of it. And he was like, oh, have you seen The Great Gatsby? And I was like, oh, maybe.
Or the Romeo and Juliet movie.
Yeah, yeah.
He's a very stylized director.
He reminds me of Tim Burton in a way where he kind of established a style early on. And he kept going with it to such a degree where it becomes overbloated and too stylistic.
Right.
I'll let you talk about Elvis, but I actually did have – I had the exact opposite opinion. This is probably my least favorite movie I saw on this list.
Okay.
And it's definitely because of Luhrmann's stylistic decisions. Yeah.
I also did read a early review of it before it came out. Like someone saw it at Cannes Film Festival and basically said that it was less a Baz Luhrmann movie about Elvis – than an Elvis movie about Baz Luhrmann. And so I thought, oh, maybe this is going to be a tough 2.5 hours sitting in the theater. But I will say I liked it a whole lot more than I thought I would. I thought that centering the Colonel in Elvis's story was a kind of fascinating and good way of treating the source material, which has been, there have been movies about Elvis in the past, some pretty good ones. I like the Kurt Russell TV movie from the early 80s. Or the recent HBO documentary, The Searcher, is really good as well. But I think that the Elvis-Colonel relationship is kind of fundamental to the understanding of Elvis, because Elvis's character doesn't really change, but he's mostly just reacting to restrictions that the Colonel is giving to him. And I thought that that was a sort of interesting way of treating...
Twist on a common narrative.
Yeah, like that sort of legend, iconography of Elvis. And also the framing device of it as being narrated by the Colonel as he's on his deathbed, sort of on a morphine drip, you realize that he is not a reliable narrator and that he is sort of twisting the facts to absolve himself of any wrongdoing in this sort of American tragedy. So I thought that was great. And of course, Austin Butler's performance is, as many people have said, sort of uncanny in how he channels Elvis's voice and mannerisms.
Well, he looks so much like, I mean, it's scary how similar he looks to him. They did a really good job.
Yeah. And his singing voice as well. I think in the first half of the movie, he's just doing all of the Elvis vocals.
Oh,
and
wow.
They're able to sort of, as the movie progresses, use some original Elvis vocal performances. But you can't hear the join. It's really impressive on a technical level. So I think he's definitely got a shot at the best leading actor. Also, before her death, Lisa Marie Presley, I think, said on Instagram that she will eat her own foot if he doesn't win an Oscar for the portrayal.
I just think it follows such a similar trope to movies that often get this kind of buzz in the past, like Bohemian Rhapsody.
Yeah. And Did Rocketman win anything?
Was that this year or was that...
I think that might have been last year.
Last year. I think it was up for something.
Yeah.
But I just feel like... I've been kind of steering clear personally myself from seeing those movies. One, because the people that the movies have been covering, I haven't been the biggest fan. Like, I did see Bohemian Rhapsody, but I was never the biggest Elvis fan. Right. I do, like, don't get me wrong, like, I like Elton John, but I was never also the biggest fan of him either. And so, to me, it just wasn't enough of a pull. And it felt like if you've seen one, you kind of seen it all.
It's very true.
Mm-hmm. Even some of the other movies, I think music is a common theme that they have around other movies, like Tar is nominated, and then what was that one a few years ago with, like, the drum player?
Oh,
do you remember that?
Not Drumline.
It was,
I see J.K. Simmons' face in my
head. Whiplash.
Yeah, and that one I saw, I just feel like all of it kind of, I feel like it kind of runs together. I mean, not that they were bad, I mean, I loved Whiplash, and you said you liked Tar, so I mean...
No, I think you're definitely hitting on something that also gives me pause about music biopics, which is that they're a very trope-heavy genre. Angela and I were talking about this yesterday. After the Weird Al, the Al Yankovic story, and the John C. Reilly parody Walk Hard.
Oh, yeah.
Like, all of those tropes can be retired now because I cannot take them seriously anymore. All of the, like... You know, starting the movie at the peak of your fame, and you may be wondering why I got here, and then it flashes back, and then there's one of the parents doesn't approve of music, and then there's a meteoric rise to success, and then a meteoric descent into drug addiction and whatever else. It's so predictable.
It's also interesting because in the Elvis movie, that all happens in like the first like 20, 30 minutes. Yeah, it happens so fast. Yeah.
And I think I forgive Elvis's use of these tropes because it's not trying to be a realistic movie. I think that, as with Rocketman, it introduces a little bit of magical realism into it, which I think is sort of befitting the subject matter. It's not going to be confused with a documentary about Elvis, but it does a very good job of conveying the spectacle.
Yeah. There's even a scene early on where it's done in a comic book art style to give you an idea of just like how... Yeah, fantastical this story can be, yeah.
That actually is kind of making me want to see it more now. Like, I like that idea of... I'm ready to see more movies bring, like, original content to the plate.
I think it is probably a safe choice for the Academy because they always do love to give awards to people playing recognizable figures in culture, especially if they do it well, but sometimes even if they don't.
Yeah.
But you also did mention Tar as being another movie that deals with music in a sort of more modern and less historical way. Angela, you saw that one. What did you...
Tar is about a famous conductor played by Kate Blanchett that takes place in today's world. Things like identity politics and like cancel culture are mentioned throughout the movie. The movie starts with Tar basically at the peak of her career. She is... preparing for a live performance with the Berlin Philharmonic Orchestra and is also writing her own autobiography. Mm-hmm. So that shows you how far in her success she's become. The movie starts there, and it's basically about her downfall because she's using her position of power to groom young and up-and-coming female musicians. Mm-hmm. It's kind of a character study about someone who is like very egotistical. Basically, like, what happens when you lose that, like, renown and fame because of something you did, like a crime in this case. Yeah. Kate Blanchett, her performance is mesmerizing. From the very first scene, she is conducting an interview with someone from The New Yorker, a journalist, in front of, like, a live studio audience. Mm-hmm. And the scenes in this movie are quite long. I think the first scene is, like, 15 minutes or something like that.
Yeah.
And you're immediately drawn into this world. Even though it's, like, it's our world, her talking about her career in the beginning, it's all fictional. This character never existed, but it feels so real. I would not be surprised if she got Best Actress easily, yeah.
I have not seen it myself. A lot of people whose opinions I trust have said that it is definitely worthwhile. Yeah, it seems like it is a piece that deals with issues that are often in the news, you know.
Yes.
People in positions of power sort of acting with impunity because there's no one to tell them no, it sounds like. Mm. Sort of interesting, I think, that it's a female protagonist when usually in the news it is, you know.
Yes, I did see one review from an actual female composer who is on the same level of being kind of world famous. Mm-hmm. She called the movie Anti-Woman because you finally get this movie that you have this LGBT woman in this position of, you know, renown. And instead of portraying her in a positive light, you make her a predator, basically. Right. But I do think that goes into one of the points of the movie, that predators have no specific gender or sexual identity or cultural or economic status. Any of those could be a potential.
Yeah.
Would you say that Tar was your favorite movie of the bunch that you saw?
I'd be okay with Tar or Banshees winning. I like both of them almost equally, yeah.
And yeah, Tar is in a lot of different categories, not just...
Six categories, I believe, yeah. I am very surprised that it wasn't in the category for best sound because someone mentions a quote early on that's basically the philosopher Schopenhauer. Mm. Noise sensitivity and someone's mental state are linked, where the more intellectually gifted someone is, the less noise they can stand. Mm. And as you're seeing Tar's downfall, she gets progressively more like annoyed by sounds in the environment. Mm-hmm. The movie is definitely like a psychological drama, character study. So,
right.
Yeah.
Yeah, that makes sense. As a conductor, when you say there's silence, then there has to be silence. So
yes.
When there's something you can't control, then yeah, that's definitely indicative of something greater.
One last comment about Tar. It has, and I don't know if this is intentionally funny or unintentionally funny, but one of the most baffling final minutes of a movie I've ever seen. I was giggling to myself uncontrollably for like 6 minutes after it finished. I was like, what?
Well, if there's nothing else to intrigue me about this movie, then that will do it.
Yeah, that's the selling point. Yeah, yeah.
Sorry, you had to get through 159 minutes to get to that 1 minute.
Angelo, you and Maureen also both saw Glass Onion, correct?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
What did you guys think of that one?
I mean, I liked it. It's not exactly the sequel to Knives Out, but it's kind of in that same like realm of like movies. I thought it was really interesting because the whole movie seemed to kind of be like anti-Elon Musk, speaking of people who people love to hate. It was really not obvious at first because it could have been like about any like tech startup guy at the beginning. And then it really became more edged towards like not liking him once they started mentioning like a certain car. And like they made that a whole big thing.
Okay.
Even though they're on an island where you can't drive. I'm like, oh, okay, this is what they're doing here. I see what you did here. I like ensemble casts when they all are like kind of weird characters and they all like have interesting relationships. And I think it's a really great take of, because especially like the main character, the reason why he's like the bad guy is because he takes advantage of this one woman's work. He basically tries to take credit for her creation. And she's like, but I know this isn't going to happen the way you want it to. So yeah, it's an interesting one.
I would say not only is it anti-Elon Musk, it's anti so many modern day like political movements. One of the characters played by Dave Bautista is a men's rights activist.
Yes.
Another character on the complete opposite side of the spectrum is someone who basically is like, we need to do more for the environment. And then she's doing probably like private jet tours.
Yeah. It's always interesting because they're like, oh, but I'm for this thing. Like, why do you have a private jet then?
It is a sequel to Knives Out, and it is very different than Knives Out. It's almost, should I say, science fiction-esque?
Yeah, it's hard to describe it, but yeah, that'd be like a good...
Yeah.
Does one have to have seen Knives Out to appreciate Glass Onion?
Oh, absolutely not.
No.
Okay.
It's a different set of characters from the first one, so...
Okay.
The common string is the main character, played by the James Bond actor.
Okay, Daniel Craig.
Yeah. Daniel Craig. Okay.
And he is kind of almost becoming our modern-day Sherlock Holmes because he already has a third movie planned.
Okay.
Which will once again probably be like a completely different genre with a new ensemble of characters. Yeah. Mm. So.
But he's been the same throughout.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
He's great. He's just as great in the first and in the second.
He has this like southern accent, which sounds awesome. Yeah.
Yeah, I like seeing him kind of break out of what we've been thinking of him for so long as being James Bond.
British man.
Because, like, what is it? He did that commercial, too, where he's dancing. Have you guys seen that?
No.
Oh, well, I think it's a commercial, but he's just kind of goofily dancing by himself. And I forget what you're trying to sell, but just the juxtaposition of it being Daniel Craig was hysterical.
Okay. That'll be added into my YouTube search history. Yeah.
Glass Onion looks like it's... Is this the only section where it was nominated for screenplay, adapted screenplay writing?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah, that's it, which I think is kind of a shame.
I think in some ways, I think the Oscars are changing in a lot of ways with the different types of movies that are being put out there. Even the fact that Top Gun... I mean, I have not seen Top Gun Maverick. I have heard a lot of good things, but the fact that this is one of the best picture nominees surprises me, just thinking about what the Academy usually goes for. But it's in there quite a bit under a few different categories, like screenplay and best picture and visual effects. So that seems kind of different than what they've, like the patterns that they've done in the past.
Yeah, they don't seem to recognize a lot of the reboots or sequels to franchises, with some exceptions, but a lot of the sort of blockbuster superhero films or, you know, long-running action franchises don't seem to get the nods that sort of standalone integrity projects do.
I don't agree with that. I do think some of these blockbusters or standalone should get that kind of recognition. Mm. That being said, I do like some of the stuff that they... I mean, like, I loved Women Talking and even, you know, like Banshees of Inisherin is definitely one of those movies that fit the tropes of what the Academy usually goes for. Yeah. And I still loved it. But one that doesn't fit it that I'm a little bit surprised about is Everything Everywhere All at Once.
Mm, yes.
Which I do think was a fantastic movie, and I'm really glad that it actually has made it on this list.
Same here. It's the sort of movie that when I see it, I want all other movies to be more like it. The first time I remember feeling that way was Being John Malkovich, a film with which this does seem to share some creative mojo.
Like the elements of the bizarre a little bit.
Yeah, it's sort of...
Genre busting.
Yeah, definitely goes through a lot of different genres. There's a lot of very sudden tonal changes. You know, they're both character-driven ensemble pieces, but with fantastical elements. I kind of want it to win in every category just so Hollywood makes more films like it. But it seems like this is the sort of film that only comes around every couple years.
I still don't know how I feel about it, even after having seen it. I think it's one of those movies to me where I appreciate it. And I think after I remember seeing it, so basically the way it's divided up is kind of in three acts. There's like a first part, a second part, and then a third. And I remember the first part deciding, like, oh, this movie is not for me. And then I remember the second part thinking, okay, now it's picking up, and now I'm like really enjoying it.
Yeah.
And then the third, then by the end of it, I was like, oh yeah, this movie is something else entirely. But I think that's the thing. Like, I think when a movie becomes a piece of art in itself, in my opinion, that's kind of when it moves into a whole other realm of recognizable film, where it's not just, you know, whatever the Academy usually goes for or blockbusters or whatever. It's a true piece of art, in my opinion.
You're right. When you think you have it figured out, you kind of... The film does sort of lull you into a false sense of security, thinking that it's going to be sort of this family drama. And then there's a certain point where it becomes a kung fu film. And then you think, wait, that doesn't make sense. And then it keeps changing the style of filmmaking. Mm-hmm. And I found it very hard to get bored by it.
Oh, yeah. It captures you the whole way through. Yeah. And it's not a short movie.
I was about to say, it's almost exhausting. it's quite long, and it's a very fast pace. Mm-hmm. Yes.
So just for that, I think it should win Best Editing.
Oh, yeah.
Also because when I saw it, I thought, I'm going to have to freeze frame so much of this.
There are scenes that are like on top of each other, or there's like montages where it's like the character in the center of the screen. Yeah. And then they're going to, you know, different dimensions, basically.
Right.
Yeah.
It wouldn't be too much of a spoiler to say that it is a film set in alternate universes. That's sort of a sci-fi trope that's getting more and more purchased these days with like the Spider-Man multiverse movie.
Inception,
yeah.
Like, even The Matrix, the newer one.
Yeah. So I'm in a sci-fi book club right now. And so we're on our, I think, seventh or eighth book. And we are noticing all the same tropes. So even how you're saying, like, this whole alternate universe thing is not being worn out, but we're seeing it time and time again.
Yeah.
I wonder if people who are filmmakers who set out to say, hey, I'm going to make a sci-fi, and I'm going to add. I mean, because that's so stereotypical sci-fi. I mean, to me, there's nothing wrong with that. I also love alternate universe stuff, so I will watch any movie that has alternate universes.
I did read, I think this was in the Wikipedia entry for the film, but the Daniels, the two directors who wrote and directed Everything Everywhere All at Once, said that it was in the making for about a decade, and as films like the Spider-Man Into the Multiverse or Rick and Morty started playing around with these alternate universe rules, they kept on thinking, oh, they're spoiling all of our fun bits. But I think that they really did it very well, and they committed to a lot of very ridiculous concepts and followed them through in ways that I was not expecting, which is a very vague way of putting it, but I'm assiduously trying to avoid spoilers.
Yes, and it's really hard for this particular movie. And I just want to say that Everything Everywhere All at Once is also very funny.
Yes.
And much like how instead of being like one genre, it's like, let's just be all the genres.
Yes.
It like touches on every like single type of comedy you can. It goes from like slapstick over the top to like really dry humor.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And the actors, I think, no matter how respected or long they've been in the biz, they were fully committed to it. And I think that's what really made it special too, was that they were willing to put themselves out there and do some of the comedy that maybe you would not have seen them ever do.
Yeah.
Or at least I wouldn't have thought I would have.
Yeah, and so I definitely think that Jamie Lee Curtis might be a favorite for the actress in a supporting role.
Definitely.
Also from this film, Stephanie Soo is also nominated, and I think either one of them should take it, having not seen any of the other films that are nominated.
Well, you saw Elvis.
I don't think there are any supporting actresses.
Oh, that's true.
Yeah. Elvis is a film that I don't think would pass the Bechdel test.
No, no.
That being said, do you think Everything Everywhere All at Once is going to win?
Very high contender, I'd say.
Okay. Yeah.
As I say, I hope it does, but I kind of am bracing myself for it not. Because as much as I liked it, as much as I bought into all of its goofy conceits, I can easily imagine someone who hates this movie with every fiber of passion that their being can muster. You know, it's weird. It's a very weird movie. I can imagine someone just hitting the 30-minute mark and just turning it off and saying, that's just garbage.
Yeah, I think it also, because of the popularity and the buzz that it got, there were some people who kind of said that it was overrated, or, you know, they were just like, I just don't get it. And I think that probably is a big point of making a movie an Oscar winner, is probably how universal it is. And I don't know if everyone would love that movie.
Yeah.
I liked it, but it was not my favorite as far as front runners go. Of the ones that I've seen, like I said, I really liked Women Talking, but Banshees of Inisherin was probably my favorite. Because I thought it was really interesting. And some similarities that I've seen, I feel like some of the Oscar movies that I've seen in the past have felt a little bit more to me like a play.
Mm.
And that's how what Women Talking felt like to me. And then Banshees of Inisherin kind of had that feel as well, because there was not much action happening. A lot of it was dialogue. And for those who have not seen it, I know Angelo and I have, but it's essentially a movie about these two men who have this lifelong friendship, and one of them decides that they no longer want to be friends with the other. And so it takes place in Ireland, and it's taking place during the Irish Civil War. So there's a lot of symbolism there, and some of the conflicts that they're having is mirroring the opinions of that time. But that being said, the conflicts they're having are totally different, and it's very depressing, but also very comedic at the same time. Like, there's a line where one of the main characters, Colin Farrell, he's the one who's kind of being pushed the curb, and Brendan Gleeson is telling him, I no longer want to be your friend. And he's like, I don't like you anymore. And Colin Farrell's response is, but you liked me yesterday. So it's a very, I would say, dark comedy. Like, I did end up crying.
Okay.
But I ended up laughing so much, too.
I just want to say that the reason why Gleason stops being friends with him, that's kind of a mystery that draws you in to the first act. I don't want to explain why he doesn't want to be friends with him, but it does touch on, you know, themes of aging and dissatisfaction with one's life, And while these are common themes that movies have touched on before, the way this movie handles those themes is like so unique and way different than I've ever seen before in a movie, to be honest. Yeah.
Yeah, like I feel like the movie fits some of the imagery and some of the scenes and some of the tropes that you would think that normally that I've seen in other Oscar-nominated films. But then when you're watching it, the story is so different and unique. And there is a point in the story that it happens pretty early on, and I'm not going to give it away, but it completely shocked me. And I was like, what am I watching? In a good way, in a very good way.
Yes. And the two main characters are very complex, like Colin Farrell. You're wondering, like, what about this character does Gleason not like? He's just like a neutral person. He's not evil. Mm. Even Gleason's character is also very just like an interesting person to do like an essay on. Yeah.
Okay.
In Banshees of Inisherin, I was watching it with my boyfriend. I turned to him and I was like, why are these people doing this? Or why are they fighting or having these kind of arguments? And they live on this remote island in Ireland. And he's like, characters aren't that smart, like based on the just kind of where they are and where they're growing up, they're products of their atmosphere and of where they're from. Whereas when I was watching Women Talking, that movie is about these women in a religious cult are attacked and they catch their attacker and ends up being one of the men that are part of their cult. And so basically the whole movie is revolved around the women deciding what they should do, whether they should stay and fight, whether they should stay and let bygones be bygones, or whether they should leave. And so it really is a movie about women talking and having this meeting. And in it, if these women are raised in this religious cult, like they have been, they all seem incredibly smart. Like they, like we're told that they can't read, but they are talking like incredibly smart people. Mm. And while I think that makes the movie more interesting and entertaining to watch, to me, it doesn't fit them being a product of their environment the same way that the characters in Banshees of Inisherin did. Mm. I would say you guys should watch both of those films. They're good.
Okay.
And where would you watch them? Are they on streaming things?
Banshees is on HBO Max. Women Talking is still in theaters.
Okay. And Banshees is coming on DVD pretty soon.
Yeah. Let's see. I think they both will be DVD
I imagine
releases.
In the months ahead, I imagine there will be DVD and Blu-rays that you can put your holds on here at the library.
And check it out from your local library.
Yes. Yes. But if it is streaming only, we also do have Rokus available for checkout, preloaded with some of the streaming services. So that's definitely a good place to watch a lot of these.
We also have Friday night movies at the library, and I believe Banshees either was shown recently or is about to be.
Top Maverick was also shown.
Yes.
Usually we try to show some of the Oscar-nominated picks.
Especially during this time, mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, and if they are future DVD releases, we will show them once they come out. Do you guys feel that the movies that you've seen this year have been properly represented for the Oscars or nominated? Do you think there were any snubs?
Well, I think it kind of depends on what the Academy's nomination guidelines are, which I think to the average Joe are maybe a little opaque, maybe a little hard to understand. It's not the calendar year, but it's the Academy's own calendar. So I'm not sure what's exactly eligible, but I thought Nope was going to get something. Nope being the other film that I saw in theaters last year, and which I thought was great, another Jordan Peele horror film. I liked it about as much as Get Out, a little more than I liked Us.
Oh, yeah. I have not seen Nope yet, but I loved Get Out. And Us, I thought, was still good, but wasn't as crazy about as Get Out.
Yeah, I'd say if you were maybe a little lukewarm on Us, then Nope is a good rebound, maybe.
Yeah, I read an article that said I think it's Gen Z's favorite genre is horror. It's horror or comedy.
Okay.
Whereas
Or horror comedy,
yeah.
Best of all worlds.
Which I think it's like Barbarian would kind of fit that. Those are kind of the movies that they're going for more, whereas are we all millennials here?
I think so.
What do you mean am I a millennial? Of course I'm a millennial.
Millennials are still a little bit more drawn, I think, towards drama and action. Hmm. One thing, so I looked up a list of the top rated films from 2022, according to Rotten Tomatoes. And Till was on. I did not see Till, but I remember a friend of mine did. And she was like, oh, you have to see this film. It's going to get nominated. It's just so good. And on Rotten Tomatoes, I think it had a 98% audience rating, and critic rating was very high too. And it is not nominated, I don't think, for anything.
Okay.
This Oscar run.
I'm not really surprised that Nope and my other pick, Northman, was not nominated for Best Picture. But I am very surprised that neither of those movies are nominated for sound or visual effects. Northman in particular has some of the most interesting cinematography and visual style in a movie I saw last year. And particularly the night scenes are almost done in like a Sin City fashion where it's like black and white. But anytime there's like a fire, it like illuminates like a red tinted color of the environment. Yeah.
Interesting. So sort of like a thermal camera.
Yeah, kind of, I guess.
You said there was one other that you were surprised wasn't nominated as well, and you said it was like maybe in the international category?
Yeah. There's one Korean movie I saw last year called Decision to Leave, which is a murder mystery done in almost like a Hitchcock style.
Okay.
It's made by the director of Old Boy, so it's...
the original Old
Boy. The original Old Boy, yeah. So the director is quite a big name in Korea. That's another one where it's very unique cinematography and visual style. It's almost like the movie's very colorful, but also very dim. The plot is basically someone gets murdered on a mountain, and there's common imagery throughout the movie of mountains and oceans. It appears in like places you wouldn't expect. Like there's one scene where the wallpaper is oceans. It's always like reflecting the characters in the scene, both their state of mind and like whether that person is an ocean person or a mountain person. Mm-hmm. So, yeah.
Interesting.
So I'm very surprised I wasn't nominated. Yeah.
Well, we are taping this a couple weeks from the actual Academy Awards. Are we prepared to make some predictions for who we think might win?
Ooh.
Maybe the big three categories: Best Picture, Best Actor, Best Actress.
Let's do it. Do we want to start with actor in a leading role then?
Yeah. The Best Actor nominees are Austin Butler in Elvis, Colin Farrell, The Banshees of Inisherin. Am I pronouncing that right? I'm trying not to say Ed Sheeran.
Inisherin.
Inisherin. Brendan Fraser in The Whale, Paul Mescal in After Sun, and Bill Nighy in Living. I want to give it to Austin Butler just in the memory of Lisa Marie.
Colin, I mean, I only saw The Banshees of Inisherin from this category, and I did think Colin Farrell did a fantastic job. Knowing Brendan Fraser won the Golden Globes makes me think maybe it'll go that way. If I'm just going to guess for accuracy's sake, that's probably what I would guess.
But I do love Bill Nighy.
Oh yeah, he's fantastic.
My choice for a leading role also goes to Austin Butler. Because once you said it before, he just like perfectly captures the mannerisms of Elvis. But I do have to say that there is one person I would choose to play Elvis, our very own host Charlie.
Well, thank you very much.
He may or may not have filled those shoes for a play for staff.
Yes. I was happy to step into those jewel encrusted shoes.
Do you want to take a swing and guess who you think might be the winner?
I mean, I haven't watched any of these movies, but, you know, Brendan Fraser is just a really nice guy. And I feel like he's definitely having, like, a comeback moment. And I feel like it'd be nice if he got it.
I would like to hear his speech.
Yeah. I feel like he'd have a really good one.
Do we want to try guessing who we think will be the actress in the leading role?
Yeah, so who do we have here? There's Cate Blanchett for Tar, Ana de Armas for Blonde, Andrea Riseborough for To Leslie, Michelle Williams for The Fablemans, and Michelle Yeoh for Everything Everywhere All at Once. Angela, you've said that Cate Blanchett is sort of a shoe-in.
I think so. But once again, it's like I only saw Tar and Everything Everywhere All at Once in this category, for all I know. The three others could be really good as well. But once again, Cate Blanchett... we recently did a movie called Capote for movie discussions.
Yeah, that's a good one.
Philip Seymour Hoffman plays Truman Capote. And you kind of said how, like, when there's an actor who's, like, too famous, my go-to is Tom Cruise. Like, I can't watch a Tom Cruise movie and be like, that's a different person. I'm like, that's Tom Cruise. Philip Seymour Hoffman, he kind of has that too. But, like, as soon as you see Capote, the movie, that's not Philip Seymour Hoffman anymore. That was Capote.
Yeah, he got his voice down. And, yeah.
And same with Tar. As soon as the movie begins, Kate Blanchett completely disappears into her role. It's a completely new person. Yeah.
I think Michelle Yeoh won the Golden Globe for Everything Everywhere All at Once. I think from what I've seen, which she's the only one that I would have seen on this list. But I did hear really good things about Ana de Armas. In Blonde.
That's the Marilyn Monroe biopic.
Yeah. I heard she was fantastic. I haven't seen it, and I do want to, even though I've heard mixed reviews about
the film.
I've
also heard mixed things about the film itself. But, yeah, her performance is said to be great.
So I would be curious, and it's always surprising to me when you see someone or a movie where it hasn't been mentioned anywhere else, but then an actor will appear in that category. It makes me think
like exceptional work in a possibly average end product.
Yes, exactly. There's a stand out there.
Yeah. And so that leaves us with the best picture. And there's quite a lot. So alphabetically, it's All Quiet on the Western Front, Avatar, The Way of Water, The Banshees of Inisherin, Elvis, Everything Everywhere All at Once, The Fabelmans, Tar, Top Gun Maverick, Triangle of Sadness, and Women Talking. So I've already said Everything Everywhere All at Once. I want it to win. I'm not going to be disappointed if it doesn't.
I think Everything Everywhere All at Once, just for being such a different type of movie and being a standalone piece of art, should win. But I would be happy if Banshees of Inisherin won as well. Women Talking, I'd be happy about. I don't think it's going to win. Just as far as, I think the acting was very good, and I think it was a good movie. But as far as artistically, I don't think it's necessarily bringing anything too different to the plate. But I would be, I think Everything Everywhere All at Once should probably win.
Yeah, my votes definitely go to Banshees of Inisherin or Tar. Having not seen the movie, I would not be surprised if The Fabelmans won, just because it's a movie about making movies, and I feel like that's a thing that Oscars like.
Yeah, Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, and yeah, there's been a lot of inside Hollywood
La La Land.
La La Land,
Yeah.
Having not seen The Fabelmans, it does seem like the sort of film the Academy would go for.
So are we all agreeing that The Fabelmans will win?
Well, it's Steven Spielberg, though, and he's been nominated a bunch of times, but he historically has like not had a good track record of winning.
So it could be one of those where they finally give him the award. Maybe not for the one he should have won for, but better late than never.
Or he just loses it because, you know, the Academy is the Academy.
Is the Academy sort of commonly thought about as being sort of out of touch like the Grammys is?
Yeah, I definitely get that overall sense. Just because it feels like, who is the Academy? Do we have really good answers to this? Kind of.
I think there was a switch up. Or I remember a couple years ago where they were trying to push against traditional and have the Academy include people who maybe were more in touch or weren't so long in the biz that they were disconnected from the newer films and newer tropes.
Yeah.
But I don't know where that stands. I mean, sometimes I think that is changing a little bit from seeing Top Gun Maverick on here, Avatar, Everything Everywhere All at Once. I do think it's changing, even thinking of Parasite, which I thought was phenomenal, but I would have never thought what we view as the Academy going for something like that.
Yeah. So maybe it's a new day in the Academy. Maybe Everything Everywhere at Once has a chance. I guess we won't find out until early March. But yeah, on our next episode, maybe we'll see how far off the mark we were. That's all the time we have for our look at the 95th Oscars. Hopefully you'll all be tuning in, and may the best films win. All right, this is the Minor Rex Podcast, over and out.